Hi, this is Chris Kepler with Does This Happen to You? The podcast where we explore the more bizarre ways of getting through your day. This week, we're starting with a story from Bonnie Preble Blaylock, who you can find on Medium.com. And here is The Time My Mother Left. My mother walked out on us once, threw up her hands, turned her back, and hit the road. We didn't blame her since we'd driven her to it. There were no more buttons left to push. She came back eventually, but there were several long, tense hours when her return was not a given. But let me start over. I needed a break this week, just a random, purposeless, sit-still-and-do-nothing break. These times can roll up on you until they're suddenly breathing hotly down your neck, buzzing in your ear like a relentless mosquito. After a couple weeks of bringing meals to school for teacher appreciation, notarizing permission slips, attacking the mound of papers on my desk for work, trying to tame the jungle yard and keep everyone fed, the late afternoon headaches would hit, and no amount of caffeine would quench the monster. As if on cue, some sadistic, hateful person posted a serene beach picture featuring their pedicured toes in the sand, which brought on the heavy woe-is-me sighs. I'm sure this is only me. You're probably breezily sipping along in the fast lane. One of the balls I've been juggling drops, or I eat one too many meals on the go. I haven't had a meaningful conversation with my spouse in 3 days, and if I have to scrape up one more nasty hairball from the floor, I'm going to lose it. I thought back to when the kids were little, days when a clean house was relative. Applesauce and ice cream sounded like a good dinner plan, and I'd be lurching around the house like Quasimodo, carrying one teething baby on my hip while dragging a whiny toddler who seemed to be permanently stapled to my leg. Some days the morning hours till nap time would drag by in a blur of broken crayons and diapers, and God bless my husband who dragged in at the witching hour before dinner on days like that. Let's just say I didn't greet him at the door wearing pearls and a smile. Those days weren't always pretty. I'd stare out of the window of despair, asking what I had done, seriously considering how much gas I had in the car, and wondering how far I could get. They call these black moods postpartum depression, and happily, there's help for that. But in the days of my own childhood, they called it motherhood, and you were expected to soldier on unaided. Which brings me to the night my mother left. My father was on a year-long tour of duty out of the country, leaving my mother alone in the house with 3 teenage girls and 2 young kids. This is a cruel and unusual predicament for all but the most unflappable. There were ingredients for a perfect storm. 3 teenagers with synced PMS, a demanding 5-year-old, and a busy toddler with a penchant for injury and going AWOL. After 18 years of marriage and a family, my mother had finally given herself permission to take a couple of college classes, so she was trying to read actual literature and write coherent papers in between the demands of 5 children. Perhaps she thought she'd been a little distracted lately, but whatever the reason, she decided to take time away from her books to make a special Sunday roast beef dinner for the 6 of us. The table was set with the main dish, mashed potatoes and steaming hot gravy, rolls and vegetables. Glasses were filled with iced tea, and we had all gathered around the dining room table to spend some quality family time together before the busyness of a new week started. No one remembers what started it. One of my sisters uttered some snarky teenage remark aimed below the belt. Another sister took offense, aiming right back, and it escalated. Escalated in the sense of Hurricane Katrina starting out as a cool ocean breeze. The noxious cocktail of female hormones, a long week, and some innate death wish fermented to the point of fission. The first shot fired was a spoonful of mashed potatoes. Before my mother could scream, "What is the matter with you people?" It was all-out war, with hot, sloshing gravy, flying green beans, vicious screaming girls,
and finally the coup de grace.
The entire pitcher of iced tea hit the wall. The third sister snatched up my younger brother from his high chair, where he screamed, wide-eyed, at the mayhem. She yanked me by the hand, dragging me into the hallway, away from the flying feast, her only thought to save the children.
At some point during the melee,
someone must have noticed an absence. No parental intervention. No parent, period. Mother had left. The driveway was empty, and an eerie and remorseful silence had befallen the dining room. Uh-oh. Had my father been home, that would have been the end of the story. Our family would have had two fewer children, as the two at fault would have been summarily executed in the backyard. As it was, they swallowed hard and cleaned up every inch of the dining room with heads hung low. My brother and I were quietly put to bed, where we went without protest. The three older sisters sat somberly in their room, probably discussing options for how to pay the mortgage until Dad came back. When we woke up in the morning, she was in the kitchen making breakfast before school as usual. We found out later she'd driven to the beach and sat on the dunes. No telling how many hours she spent there, letting the sound of the waves soothe her nerves, watching the little crabs scurry in and out of their holes while she chain-smoked Territon 100s. She'd had it up to here and needed to remember that she loved us. We didn't speak of that day until years later, and it would be many more years later before my father was told, after my sisters had moved out and could ostensibly arrange their own witness protection. On days when I, too, have had it up to here with whatever fill-in-the-blank calamity takes over, I remember the time my mother left and recognize the mental red flags that signal that it's time to bug out to salvage some sanity. It will not always be this way or feel like this. New mercies arrive at the doorstep each day, regular as the morning paper. I'm far enough away from the beach now that I can't rely on the tides, but I can close the bathroom door and breathe for just a few minutes. And when worst comes to worst, I'm heading out for dinner. And now we have My Worst Ever Summer Job by Emily Friedel, who you can also find on Medium.com. My cherry-picking job in the summer of 95 began at 7 a.m. on a Monday with a fresh face, a mild crush on my friend's picking partner, Josh, and visions of casually climbing a ladder to pluck ripe cherries from the tree. My cherry-picking job ended 11 days later at around 7:15 a.m. on a Friday with a peeling nose, a terrible fall, and a crushed nerve in my right leg. In between, there was cherry-induced diarrhea, several failed attempts to flirt with Josh, a touch of heat stroke, and the violent shattering of all my romantic ideas about cherry picking. I grew up in the country and was taught to embrace hard work from a young age. I was chief lawn mower and huntsman spider remover by the age of 10. If there was wood chopping to be done, soil to be shifted, or structures to be erected, I was there to pull my weight, and I usually enjoyed it. I loved being outdoors and found manual labor satisfying, so I thought cherry picking was going to be fun. On the first morning, we waited outside the packing shed to receive our instructions. We were each given a bucket to strap around our waist and a 6-foot tripod ladder. We would get paid $9 Australian per crate of cherries picked. We needed to be careful while picking and not rip off bits of trees. I was excited, especially since during the introductory session, the only thing that separated me from Josh was my friend John. I daydreamed about how I would impress them with both my ladder climbing and cherry picking skills. I knew I was good at the former and was sure I was going to be brilliant at the latter. I was nearly 15 and hadn't had much experience with boys, but had high hopes that my exemplary work ethic would get Josh's attention. We were split into groups and spread around different areas of the orchard. John and Josh went to the gourmet cherry section. I went to the normal cherry section. My heart sank a little.
Josh wasn't going to see my ladder-scaling prowess. But I was still optimistic. A few hours in, I was less optimistic. Summer in this part of Australia smells like baked grass. It's stinking hot and dry. There's also the Antarctic ozone hole nearby, so the sun is fierce down here. By about midday, the scorched air simmers, and it's unpleasant to breathe. And then there were the flies, the clouds of little black bush flies which hunt for moisture in the corners of your eyes and mouth, and up your nose. They're relentless, and everyone knows they spend most of their lives on rotting cow carcasses and shit, which means they're also really gross. So there I was mid-morning on that Monday, at the top of my 6-foot ladder, slathered in greasy sunscreen, swatting flies with my free hand, and trying not to think about where they'd been. I was also playing Find the Cherry because I'd been relegated to an area of the orchard where the trees weren't doing so well. The cherries were dotted throughout the branches like someone had done some half-arsed Christmas tree decorating. I'd get a handful of cherries in my bucket, then have to climb down, reposition a ladder, jump on the ladder so the pegs on the ends of the three legs sunk into the ground, climb back up again, and start again. It took forever to get a bucket load, and it took several bucket loads to fill a crate. That $9 per crate, which sounded easy peasy at 7 a.m. and was certain to lead to untold wealth for a 15-year-old, took around 2 hours to earn. To make matters worse, slower, I'd taken the order to be careful with the trees seriously. Meanwhile, the professional pickers nearby were leaving cherry tree carnage in their wake. It looked like their section of the orchard had been hit by a hurricane. My one consolation was eating the odd cherry. They were sweet, firm, and juicy. The little sugar hits boosted my spirits and kept me going. During the lunch break, when I met John and Josh down by the river for a much-needed dip, they told me how much fun they were having. It was all cherry fights and hilarity over in the gourmet section. John had filled a small styrofoam cooler with the golf ball-sized goodies they were picking and was planning on pinching them. He reckoned his cooler full of cherries was worth way more than what we were getting paid per crate. The gourmet cherries were all exported, perhaps to Japan, and John thought it unfair the best cherries went overseas. He was possibly going to start a gourmet cherry black market in town, too. All I could think about was how much quicker it would be to fill a crate with those ginormous cherries. By knockoff time on that first day, 3 p.m., I was exhausted. I felt faint from being out in the sun all day, and the single peanut butter sandwich I'd packed for lunch hadn't provided nearly enough energy. My thumbs were bleeding from pushing cherry stalks off branches. Apparently, you can't just pluck cherries, as I'd imagined. And my stomach was also telling me, with deep growls, that I shouldn't have eaten so many cherries. As the hours passed, my stomach got angrier, and my sunburn deepened due to an inadequate sunscreen reapplication schedule. I spent much of that evening on the toilet, with what John would have called the squirts, while radiating heat from my bright red skin. The fact that I looked a bit like a giant cherry would have been funny if I hadn't been so miserable. I was back at 7 a.m. the next day, though. The next few days all played out in much the same way, except I'd learned my lessons about cherry eating and sun protection, until the following Friday morning. I started at the end of a row near an irrigation ditch. The earth there was clay heavy and baked hard by the sun. I tried to push my ladder into the ground, but couldn't get the pegs right in. After wrestling with it for 10 minutes, I thought it was secure enough and climbed. I sat on the top of the ladder. To stabilize myself so that I could pick with both hands, I hooked my legs in behind the top rung. This was a mistake. With my bucket about a quarter full, I stretched for a cherry that was just out of reach. I felt the ladder wobble. I knew what was coming. I knew there was nothing I could do about it. I wouldn't be able to unhook my legs in time. The ladder, my quarter-full cherry bucket, and I came crashing down. I fell backwards and landed on the ladder, so my body weight levered my shins hard against the rung. I screamed. My right shin felt like it had exploded. There was some blood. A crowd gathered, and someone drove me to the hospital. I didn't want to go to the hospital because the last time I'd been there was when I'd run over my foot with the lawnmower, and I was afraid telling them I'd fallen off a ladder while cherry-picking would cement my reputation as a massive klutz. Josh would be so unimpressed. I was in too much pain to argue, though. No broken leg, luckily, just some split skin, a crushed nerve, extensive bruising, and badly battered pride. I still have the scars and no feeling in a large portion of my lower leg. I went back the next year. I have no idea why. Maybe it's because I don't like being beaten, and I wanted to prove that I was tough enough to do the job. Maybe I'm a masochist. On the second day back, the owner of the orchard drove past as I was pouring cherries into a crate and said, "Hey, you're the girl who fell off the ladder last year." That was it. When I realized I was famous for being the only person who'd ever had a bad fall in that orchard, they're much more common in a nearby orchard, which is located on the side of a hill, I decided enough was enough. I conceded defeat and got a less perilous job stacking shelves in the local supermarket. Thanks so much for listening. If you like this story or my podcast, please share and let me know. You'll find me on Twitter at Chris KK Aria, Pinterest, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Remember, it's Chris with a K. I'm always looking for fun stories to narrate, so if you're an author or writer with a story which fits the "Does This Happen to You?" theme, please contact me or comment on my Podbean page. You can hire me to narrate and produce your book into an audiobook ready for upload to Audible too. Want to hear more stories? Please become my podcast patron. Just click the link on my Podbean page.